From KLW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I'm from the Intermission.
UCCC World.
West Oakland.
East Oakland.
Coming up, technology is changing the way we conceive of childbirth.
You would give me a big hug, and then you would give me a pat on my belly.
Protect those ovaries.
Egg donation is big business, making mothers of women who can't otherwise have children and making profits for those who make it possible.
That was their superstar, the goose with the golden eggs.
But the fairy tale doesn't always have a happy ending.
The scariest thing about being a donor for, I don't think just for me, but for a lot of donors, is that they don't know the long-term effects of all of these drugs that are going into our system.
Today on Cross Currents, we'll pull back the curtain on fertility treatments. Stay tuned. If you think back to your childhood, you might remember the fable of the goose with the golden eggs. Every day, the goose would lay one golden egg, and the peasant couple that owned her would use that egg to buy what they needed. But one day, the couple got impatient. They wanted all the gold at once. So they caught the goose, killed her, and cut her open. They expected to find a belly full of gold, but there was nothing there. Now the peasants had no more goose and no more gold. For a growing number of American women, this fable is a cautionary tale. Those who delay childbearing into their 30s and 40s increasingly go to great lengths to conceive. In the Bay Area and around the country, these women rely on in vitro fertilization, sperm banks, surrogates, and egg donors. The egg donors are typically young, healthy women looking to do good and make a few thousand dollars. They don't have fertility problems. They are the golden geese. But donating eggs can be risky. The procedure is invasive, and not much is known about its long-term health effects. Reporter Teresa Chin travels up the West Coast to give us an intimate look inside the human egg trade.
Hi!
So is Nelson work for you, or am I interrupting?
Oh, yeah, it's fine.
Angela Rogers is a tall, attractive 27-year-old with short brown hair and the kind of wide blue eyes you usually only see in Disney movies. She recently graduated with a master's degree in marriage and family therapy and lives in a small house in Portland, Oregon with her husband, Stephen, who's also finishing school. But Angela, AJ to her friends, has another life, too. In her cozy, colorful kitchen, she gives me a brief lesson in the tools of her trade. Refrigerated alcohol wipes, bottles of drugs with vaguely feminine-sounding names,
the Follistim and Menopur, and the Lupron,
and a set of medical syringes with slender plastic bodies and fine half-inch needles.
And my biohazard container, which that's fun to travel with.
When she injects herself with these needles each day, AJ joins thousands of young, healthy, fertile women across the country doing the same thing. They're voluntarily pumping themselves full of hormones, enduring intimate prodding and poking, and eventually undergoing minor surgery, all for the explicit purpose of helping a complete stranger have a baby. The reasons why are not always straightforward. Maybe it's altruism, or maybe it's empathy, or maybe it's the $5,000 to $10,000 paycheck that comes with most donation cycles. But what is clear is that more and more women are signing up to share their ovaries. Including me, maybe.
Okay, can we start from the beginning?
Sure, you mean we just can't start talking right about your ovaries?
Yeah, just let's save the ovary talk for like 30 seconds into the phone call.
You got it.
It all started a few months ago when I got a call from my best friend, Matt Fellows. He wanted to tell me that he and his long-term boyfriend, Chris, were thinking about having kids. My first thought was, that's awesome. Matt and I have been best friends since college. I adore the two of them, and there's no doubt in my mind they'd make fantastic parents. My second thought, though, was something like, oh, sh**. I guess it's finally time for us to have this conversation. I called Matt recently to talk about it.
Okay, I'm trying to think back on this whole baby conversation. I don't remember exactly when it was that we first started joking about me being your egg donor. Do you remember?
It was definitely after we started living together. I don't remember exactly when we started talking about it.
I remember sometimes we would say goodbye and you would give me a big hug and then you would give me a pat on my belly.
you would say.
Yeah, you know, protect those ovaries.
But, I mean, you could have done it to any body part, really. Like, you could have given me a pat on, like, my forehead and been like, take care of that brain. And it would have been the same kind of silly joking around at the time.
I don't think it was ever a joke. It was more like, gosh, well, you know, this is something that maybe someday could happen.
Yeah, I mean, but it seemed like all of a sudden we stopped joking.
Yeah, and it was kind of a sudden transition because, you know, I became in a, you know, a stable long-term relationship that where all of a sudden, you know, we're talking about the possibility of having children together. And then the next question comes up, well, how are we going to have children together? And at that point, I'm like, well, I kind of sort of have an egg donor.
Kind of, sort of. Maybe it was never exactly a joke, but until that moment, I had never given the idea of egg donation any serious thought. Once I started, I realized there's a lot to think about. On the one hand, it's a cool concept. Here's a person, you say to yourself, who thinks highly enough of you to want to make babies together. Babies who might have your eyes, your hair, your quirks. And sure, it's going to require a little discomfort, but it's not like we're talking about a kidney. Just a couple of dozen cells you're not really using anyway. So why not do it? But then you think about yourself and your body. You're 29 years old, and you don't have any babies of your own yet. You think about the short-term discomfort and the long-term risks. You think about the needles.
And so I just pinch up some of my fat here on my thigh. Try to avoid the same place I shot into recently so I don't get too bruised up. And just poke it in.
Back in Portland, I watch AJ as she does her nightly hormone injections.
Did that hurt?
Nope.
AJ makes it look easy. But then again, she's kind of a pro. This is her sixth time donating her eggs. That's the maximum clinics recommend a woman go through any fertility cycle. And she's done it all within the last 3 years. It's pretty amazing, considering what the donation process involves. Here's how it works. Every month, a typical woman releases one mature follicle. That's another word for egg cell. And that's when her body has a chance to get pregnant. But with egg donation, that same woman can take a combination of hormones that cause her body to produce lots of mature follicles. Usually between 10 and 12, but sometimes as many as 30 or 40. Doctors retrieve these cells surgically, fertilize them, and then implant them into the mom-to-be. Now, if you're the one getting them, more mature follicles is a good thing because it means more chances for mom to get pregnant. But if you're the one giving the eggs, the process is kind of hard on your body, so you don't want to produce more than 25 or so. Above that, and donors run the risk of what's called ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome, meaning your ovaries don't shut down properly and can swell and leak fluid into your body. It seems like a lot, but 25 eggs don't stretch as far as you might think. Only a fraction will be healthy enough to get fertilized, and even fewer will go on to develop into usable embryos. In the end, the majority of donor cycles don't result in a pregnancy. Yet in AJ's case, every woman she has donated to has conceived and carried the babies to term, including two sets of twins. It's a feat that's earned her a reputation for success at the clinic, including a new nickname.
Well, that's what the doctor said yesterday, that I was their superstar, the goose with the golden eggs.
That's reporter Teresa Chin, and this is the radio documentary, The Goose with the Golden Eggs. You're listening to Cross Currents from KLW News. I'm Holly Kernan. Coming up, an unexpected turn.
I'm hoping in a few weeks to go and get my ovaries checked and that they'll be cyst-free and normal-sized and that everything will be fine. You know, that's what I'm hoping, but I'm a little nervous and, you know, no one's really going to know if that's going to affect me long term until it does or doesn't.
The story continues. Stay tuned.
2 weeks before her egg retrieval surgery, AJ lets me tag along on her medical appointments.
So the plan for today is to first drive to Oregon Reproductive Medicine, which is in Northwest Portland, to get my ultrasound and blood drawn, make sure everything's looking good, that I don't have any cysts and everything.
We arrive at a red brick medical building in a nice area in Portland. Rogers has been here before, but it's the first time I've ever visited a fertility clinic.
Hi there.
Hi.
This is the nicest doctor's office I've ever been in.
I know, it's like swanky. I think fertility is pretty big money. Like, the procedures are very expensive, and people are willing to pay a lot.
There is a lot of money in this industry. Women trying to get pregnant with donor eggs typically spend around $30,000 per attempt. Egg donors themselves are paid only a fraction of these fees, about $7,000 for 6 weeks' worth of work plus recovery time. Repeat donors like Rogers can earn slightly more per cycle, about $7,500. But most clinics say money isn't supposed to be the point, and AJ agrees.
I'm such a helper. Like, I have such a strong desire inside of me to help others. And this is one of the ways that I am best at helping. It's my gift to the world, I suppose. Being fertile, it's something that I'm not currently using for myself. It's one of the ways that I've been able to help people in really huge, life-changing ways. So why not do it as many times as I can?
Which isn't to say the money isn't helpful.
The very first one I used to pay off a credit card that I had in college, that was awesome. I was able to just cut that up and pay it down. Really freeing feeling. The second and third ones I used to pay for our wedding and honeymoon.
And AJ isn't alone. A high percentage of egg donors are students trying to pay off their loans. The American Society of Reproductive Medicine officially discourages fertility agencies from recruiting on college campuses. The thinking is that there's too much pressure on students to pay back loans, and they might be too eager to overlook the risks associated with egg donation. But back at the clinic waiting room, I see a number of young women in college sweatshirts. I can guess why they're here. Like AJ, they sit quietly and flip through magazines as they wait for their names to be called.
Angela?
Yes.
We just will be able to take you back by yourself today.
Okay.
All right.
There's a definite air of secrecy around egg donation, and it's not just in the clinic. Many egg donors don't tell their families about the procedures. Some families who've gotten pregnant with donor eggs don't tell their kids. As a person trying to decide whether or not to be an egg donor, it drives me a little crazy that not many people are open to talking about this. Except AJ, of course.
The ultrasound was normal, she said. There were about, was it 22?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
22 follicles that she counted. And
the first time AJ donated her eggs, she gave 33. Too many. She hyperstimulated, meaning her ovaries swelled, and she had to go to the hospital to get rehydrated and prevent infection. She wasn't going to donate again, but then she found out her recipient got pregnant with her eggs. A few months later, AJ signed up for her second donor cycle.
Yeah, I think for me, just helping people kind of trumps everything. Going through something and not feeling well is worth it if I was able to help a family's dreams come true. And, you know, helping someone create a life, that's kind of a big deal.
The fertility clinic said they could decrease AJ's future hormone doses to reduce her chances of hyperstimulating again. She agreed, and after that, it was fine. Her second donation produced only 13 eggs. Her third, 23. Her fourth, 25. Her fifth and most recent, 26 eggs.
The scariest thing about being a donor for, I don't think just for me, but for a lot of donors, is that they don't know the long-term effects of all of these drugs that are going into our system. Like, maybe in 10 years, a bunch of donors are going to get cancer, but who's going to know about that? Unless they make a big fuss about it in the news and, you know.
It's a little mind-boggling, but in the 25-year history of egg donation, there hasn't been a single large, long-term group study of former donors. One of the reasons is because right now, the government doesn't regulate egg donation. Instead, it operates on a set of recommendations created by the American Society of Reproductive Medicine, a member-based medical nonprofit. Standard guidelines, like limiting egg donors to 6 lifetime cycles, are based on studies of infertile women who use similar fertility treatments like in vitro fertilization. But there's a problem with doing things this way. As it turns out, egg donors tend to be a lot different from their infertile counterparts. They're younger, thinner, poorer, and no one knows what will happen to them down the road.
It's exploitive. Rich, wealthy women aren't selling their eggs. Because even if you're the risks are fully disclosed, you'll still say, yeah, where do I sign? I need the money. You will take those risks, and you'll take more risks if you have more need.
Jennifer Lall is a former nurse and one of the most outspoken critics of egg donation. She recently made a short film about her concerns called Eggsploitation.
We see young women being looked at as a market for eggs.
Everything that happened to me was a chain of events where certain medical risks were not taken into account.
And when he saw my distended abdomen, his face went white.
The whole time I felt like they were trying to get rid of me.
He looked me in the eye and he said, "Oh, Alexandra, we will try to save your ovary, but you may lose your ovary."
If you can't tell, Eggsploitation is a scary film. It features 5 women, all former donors, who have had serious health problems since they gave away their eggs. Breast cancer, colon cancer, unexplained infertility, ovarian hyperstimulation, like what happened to AJ, where your ovaries fill up with fluid. In the worst cases, they can burst like water balloons. You get the picture. But the big question is, did their health issues come from their egg donation? Lal thinks it's a distinct possibility.
We're not fooling ourselves to think we can do this risk-free. And do we want young women, in the prime of their potential fertility years, to be assuming risk? What, so somebody can have a baby? It's not the same as an organ donor. Nobody's going to die because they can't have a baby.
A lot of what Law was saying made sense to me. But I had also talked to several donors who had gone through their cycles without any problems. And what about couples like Matt and Chris, who couldn't have biological children? As an egg donor, I could give them that chance to experience the joy of parenthood. How did that measure up to the possible risks? I found myself utterly confused, as you can hear in this audio diary I recorded after my conversation with Lal.
I talked to Matt. He called me. I haven't talked to him in a while about this story. And to tell you the truth, I'm a little nervous because the stuff I've been researching has been pretty negative on egg donors, especially that exploitation documentary, which, you know, it made me really think, like, I have spent so much of my life being healthy, and here I am considered doing something that could very well increase my chances of breast cancer, could very well decrease my ability to have children in the future. And, you know, I was kind of this close to saying, I made my decision, I'm not going to do it. I feel like a terrible friend to do that kind of thing to them. So he asked, "How's the story going?" And I told him, "Oh, you know, I saw this documentary and how these women had almost died." And he said, "Well, this is about our relationship, and we are family. We're going to have a relationship with each other no matter what." And I just think that's so beautiful that as much as I know he wants a kid someday, he's not willing to risk like our friendship. He's not willing to risk my health. And ironically, it's like, isn't that exactly the kind of person that you think should have a kid?
That's reporter Teresa Chin, and this is the radio documentary The Goose with the Golden Eggs. You're listening to Cross Currents from KLW News. I'm Holly Kernan. We're exploring the egg donation industry in this special edition. Coming up,
this industry is not set up to handle anything when something goes wrong. That's the reality. Actually, that's kind of the take-home point. It's like, if things go right, it's great for everyone. But when goes down, everybody's woefully unprepared.
We'll find out what happens to AJ Rogers next when we continue our documentary about human egg harvesting. And now let's return to reporter Teresa Chin.
2 weeks later, I meet up with AJ Rogers again, this time in San Francisco for her egg retrieval. The night before the surgery, we sit on the bed in her hotel room in Fisherman's Wharf, where she and Steven are staying. Her belly is a lot bigger than the last time I saw her, and she seems a little uncomfortable.
Yeah, physically I'm not feeling great. I'm feeling worn down. I have a pillow here because my pants are undone because they're too tight with my belly being so big right now. And it just seemed inappropriate to be getting interviewed with my pants all open. So I have the pillow there making me look like I'm still appropriate.
By her doctor's most recent estimates, AJ's normally almond-sized ovaries have stretched to accommodate almost 20 mature follicles, several of which are up to 1 inch across.
I feel like everything kind of lifts, like all of my internal organs kind of lift and like are crunching against me. It's hard to describe. I mean, it's not severe. It's not like the first time when I donated my eggs where I was having a hard time breathing. It just definitely feels like there's a lot more jam-packed into my abdomen than normal.
Usually, the body only makes one of these mature eggs every month, but the hormones that AJ's been taking has made her ovaries temporarily go into overdrive. AJ's doctors say she's doing a great job, although she says she's not entirely sure what that means.
I still wish I knew more about what was actually going on inside my body. But it seems like there are so many different things to understand, and I should probably just be concentrating on keeping myself healthy instead of reading too much about what's going on in my body. I might freak myself out that way.
One way AJ comforts herself is by reading the letters she gets from women who've had babies, thanks to her.
Dear Angela, I've been thinking of you often recently as we get closer to the egg retrieval and hoping you're getting through the final phase without too much discomfort.
Hi, Angela. We just want you to know that for us, family has and always will be everything that is important in the world.
Hello, Angela. I'm very glad to meet you and your genes. When I was your age, I never imagined I would have a child in this manner. But here we are, and thank you for being interested in helping me realize a lifelong dream.
There have been so many starts and stops, so many disappointments.
For some reason, I did not find a man to love, to share my dreams, and be the father of my children.
We cannot really thank you enough for what you're doing.
All the tests, the shots, bloating, etc.
You seem to be a kind, thoughtful, beautiful, smart, healthy woman.
I don't know if I would have been able to do what you're doing when I was your age.
I'm glad you decided to be an egg donor, and I look forward to seeing where this process takes us.
Just reading these letters, it's made me think a lot about my own fertility.
When do you think you might want to have a family?
Oh, I'm pretty ready now.
Hey, good morning.
A little after 7 a.m., the day of the surgery, I pick up AJ and her husband from the hotel and drive them to the fertility clinic. We're the first patients to arrive.
I've never been here when it's dark outside.
Quite peaceful, right?
Yeah.
The nurses take AJ into the back room for surgery prep. Here's how the operation works. Doctors will put her under anesthesia, then use a long, thin needle to take the mature follicles, which will later be fertilized and transferred to her recipient. The entire process only takes about 20 minutes. I sit in the waiting room with AJ's husband.
So you're not nervous or anything?
I get a little bit nervous, but I don't know. I think I was more nervous the first and second time. For sure.
She seems really enthusiastic about it, though.
Yeah, it's kind of like not even a big deal to her anymore. Like, as far as the process that she has to go through, she kind of has it down, and they all acknowledge that. Like, oh, yeah, you know how to do this. This is easy for you. Yeah, maybe I forget that it's still a surgery, though.
After a short wait, the nurses come back and give us an update. The doctors had been able to retrieve 27 eggs, 10 more than they had expected. AJ's recipient didn't come to the surgery since she was prepping for her own procedure, but she sent AJ a thank you basket containing boxes of coconut water, a handmade journal, and a brand new iPad. The next day, I asked AJ if she wanted to celebrate. After all, she was about to start a new chapter in her life. No more scheduling her evenings around injections or skipping her morning coffee. No more blood draws or ultrasounds or IVs. She was free to do whatever she wanted. And as it happened, she had precisely the thing in mind, an evening of karaoke. It was over. AJ was happy, her husband Steven was relieved, and it seemed like all was well. A few weeks after the surgery, I got a call from AJ.
When I got back to Portland, my belly started expanding, like getting bigger and bigger, and I started feeling worse and worse. And when it got to the point that I couldn't put on my own shoes, I was like, yeah, I think maybe this is a problem.
AJ called the fertility clinic doctors in San Francisco, who told her she was showing signs of hyperstimulating. They said she should go to the hospital right away.
So I went to the ER. They didn't really know what to do with me. I told them that I had had that a couple of years ago and needed to be monitored to make sure that there wasn't any severe complications, like that my ovaries weren't twisting. Because ovarian torsion is like your ovary is a water balloon and it's being twisted. And, you know, if you twist the water balloon, it's going to pop. And it just kind of, the seriousness of it hit me, like, because I am also closer now to wanting to have kids than I was when I first started my egg donation. What if this ruins my ability to have children? What if I do lose my ovaries because of this? What if this is giving me permanent damage? We don't know. No one knows.
The next day, AJ left the ER and went to a fertility specialist who knew more about egg donation.
They gave me an ultrasound, and I got to see my ovaries on the screen, and they were gigantic. Each of them were almost the size of grapefruits, and there was fluid all around my entire abdomen that had leaked out of my ovaries and was just like surrounding all of my organs.
The doctor told her she needed surgery immediately.
It was horrible. They took this giant needle and inserted it vaginally. It had to go through my cervix, no anesthesia or anything, and just took out like a liter and a half of fluid. 2 liters of fluid is like the big soda bottles.
The operation was successful. AJ wasn't going to lose her ovaries, and afterwards she felt physically better. But she was still weak, and she had a lot of unanswered questions.
I'm hoping in a few weeks to go and get my ovaries checked and that they'll be cyst-free and normal-sized and that everything will be fine. You know, that's what I'm hoping, but I'm a little nervous and, you know, no one's really going to know if that's going to affect me long-term until it does or doesn't.
AJ's getting sick hit me pretty hard. She had seemed so positive about the entire egg donation experience, so confident it would turn out all right for everyone. And I had been there, imagining myself in her place every step of the way. And now, looking at pictures of her distended abdomen over Facebook, it just didn't seem worth it. Not for a couple of $1,000s. Not for the good feelings. Not if something like this could happen to me.
Maybe that's a good thing. And I don't think I would have said that in the past. But I don't want my friends to have to go through this same thing.
A few weeks later, I heard from AJ again. She was feeling better and had just found out that her recipient was pregnant. The goose with the golden eggs had done it again. And she sounded really happy. So happy, it was almost as if she had forgotten our last conversation. I couldn't forget it, though. And so I called Matt, and I told him AJ's entire story. I told him I wasn't sure the risk was worth it.
Hey, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. The question is, like, well, first of all, if you go through with it, you know that we're not going to let any of the sort like that go down.
I know. This industry is not set up to handle anything when something goes wrong. That's the reality. Actually, that's kind of the take-home point. It's like, if things go right, it's great for everyone. You know, no real complaints by anyone. And people are pretty positive. I mean, a lot of referrals in general in this industry come from people who have done it, who tell their friends, their family members, and they're like, yeah, I would do that too. But when it goes down, everybody's woefully unprepared.
It's like you said, this investigation is more of an audition of the industry.
It is, because this is not me saying, like, would you guys be good parents? You guys would be fantastic parents. You know, you guys would be amazing. And one way or another, you will be, but, like...
Well, if it turns out that this is not something that we pursue, then so be it. Because I'd much rather this be a harder decision rather than go into this not knowing the consequences and have a bad outcome.
We're talking about your life, though. We're talking about your ability to have biological children. You know, it seems...
Well, life doesn't always happen exactly how you would have it done or planned. There are wrenches thrown into the mix, and we deal with them. I had grand plans of marrying a woman. And things turned out just fine.
For Matt and me, there isn't a happy ending. Until we can find some answers or a clinic willing to work with us to minimize the health risks, I can't be his egg donor. I hope we can work it out, because I do think Matt would be a great father. I just wish it were as simple as laying a golden egg. In San Francisco, I'm Teresa Chin.
Teresa Chin is a reporter with the UC Berkeley Graduate School of Journalism. You can find more information about egg donation and fertility treatments at our website. It's kalw.org. You've been listening to Cross Currents from KLW News. The team includes Hannah Baba, Julie Kane, Martina Castro, Audrey Dilling, Erica Moo, Rena Palta, Seth Samuel, and Stephen Short. Happy birthday, Mr. Short.
Thank you.
Today's documentary was produced by Teresa Chin and edited by Casey Miner, Ben Trefney, myself, and Chris Hoff, who also engineered the final mix. Also thanks to City Car Share. It provides an alternative transportation option for our reporters. City Car Share is online at citycarshare.org. And thanks to you. We are listener-supported radio. Tune in to Cross Currents tomorrow at 5. We're going for a ride. We'll follow the path of the city's new bike plan, talk with the head of the bike coalition, and get a crash course in the rules of the road.
What worries you?
I'm getting hit by a car.
Okay.
I'm afraid of getting hit by a car.
Okay.
Yeah.
Come along for a two-wheeled tour. That's tomorrow at 5 on Cross Currents. Where else but the Bay Area would you find a band that describes its music as a soulful and aggressive style of postmodern, improvised, composed, jazzical sound that is informed by dub, Afrobeat, abstract funk, drum, and bass? Well, there's more, but you get the idea. And that idea is called the Brown Fellinis. They have a CD release party planned next Sunday at Café du Nord in San Francisco. Doors open at 8 p.m. All of that information is at our website, kalw.org. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan.
Aquamarinian hue is the shade of this melancholy brew, and it's quick to boil.
Hello, I'm Artem Skonohas, a journalist from a northern European country called Latvia. Currently, I'm gaining new experience at the KALW News Department as a part of a special scholarship from the Baltic American Freedom Foundation. Perhaps you've heard of it, perhaps not.
No.
Nope.
No,
but we're glad you're here, Artem.
KALW is more than just a local public radio. It gives an opportunity to strengthen Baltic American friendship ties. Help bind our countries together with your financial donation to kalw.org. Thank you.